our fearless leader today that's going to talk to us for the next 3 hours about emergency preparedness for government records. Those of you that have been through any sort of natural catastrophe, whether that be flood, fire, or tornado, probably can understand pretty well the stresses that go along with that as a governmental entity. Brett Adams, you can read his bio. I guess when you're good at everything, you get a good chance to do a lot of different things.
Jack of all, master of none. Yeah.
Jack of all trades. Yeah. Did his undergraduate work here in Texas, North Texas, then moved to Michigan for graduate school. He also served in the Air Force for some time. One of his responsibilities there was working with the organization's records and files and making sure they were compliant with all of the appropriate rules. After being on active duty, he was a training instructor for Army and Air Force Exchange Service at Royal Air Force in Lakenheath, England. He developed lesson plans and presented classes on a variety of topics. He also spent time as a financial advisor in Colorado Springs and worked in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And now we are lucky enough that he has taken his talents to the Texas State Library and Archives Commission. So let's give Brett Adams a warm welcome.
Thank you, Mark. Everybody, the speaker's in my mouth here. I have to put this. Is that okay? I can project well enough. So, thank you for coming out this afternoon. I realize this is an session for you, but we at the State Library have a strong belief that this is an important subject for you all. So my goal is at the end of this time, ideas, some things to think about, go back and do your daily tasks and duties that will help prevent you from being in hot water should you have an incident occur that affects your records. You know, there was a new manager. He was getting settled into his office. Oh, that's better. Thank you. Desk. While going through his desk, he came across envelopes. Three of the envelopes were numbered, and the fourth said, open first. So he opened the envelope, said open first, and in it was a letter from his predecessor. These envelopes would save you a world of problem and trouble. Open them in sequential order. Didn't think anything of it, tossed them back in his desk. About a year later, workers went on strike. Factory shut down. They were losing money. He was at risk of losing his job. After a long night of negotiations with the union, they had a break. He went back to his office. He pulled out envelope number one, opened it up, and said, blame me, your predecessor, for everything. They thought, hey, why not? He went back. Negotiations continued. He threw that out and worked. The issues were resolved. Workers went back to work. Factory started back up. His job was saved. About 6 months later, workers on strike again. Went to his office, pulled out envelope number two, and said, blame the government for everything. Thought, hey, Canada, right? Went back, wouldn't you know? Tragedy was averted, his job was saved. Well, a couple months later, rumors started circulating. The workers were thinking about striking. Without hesitation, what do you think he did? Went to his desk, pulled out envelope number three, opened it up, and it said, prepare four new envelopes. I wouldn't encourage you to follow that sort of master plan, but you could have been better prepared, right?
Yep.
Put it wherever you want. Just don't hurt me. He's pinning me. Oh, better there? Okay. I thought I'd be better closer. I want to share a couple statistics with you. The FBI's National Crime Information Center, there are over 120,000 laptops, computers, 106,000 cell phones that were reported stolen in the United States alone in 2009. 2008, 92% of IT, information technology security folks, said that they had reported a laptop was stolen or lost, and that 71% of those incidents involved a data breach. So thinking about all management comes to mind when you hear the term records management. I'll give you one word that we pick up on a lot. It's fact, low priority. But I think anybody who's, and I want to see a show of hands here in a bit, anybody who's ever had records damaged or lost because of a fire or vandalism, or how about a broken water pipe? Hopefully, understands the importance of being properly prepared. Have any of you had records damaged or destroyed or lost of some sort of an incident? Fire, water, vandalism, and I'll give you some other examples later. What happens?
Hurricane,
there you go, there's a good one. That's an all-encompassing. There's water, there's wind, there's all. Anybody else? Well, you're lucky. Lucky. Okay. Here's our game plan. I'm going to talk about some emergencies, and I'm going to keep using the word incident because an event is something that's planned, right? Event in Miami, right? That was a planned event. Incidents. So emergency or disaster or crisis, whatever word you want to associate with incident, feel free. We're going to talk about some emergencies throughout Texas that in one way or another have affected records. I'm going to talk to you about some important legal obligations pertaining to the emergency preparedness part of your records. I'm going to talk about essential records. Are they? Why are they important to you? How do you differentiate them from all of your records that you deal with on a daily basis? How do you protect them? What does that mean? And how do you make sure you can access those records during and after an incident, whatever that incident may be? And then we're going to talk about how you plan and respond to a records. Management is the foundation of any course, any class that we do out of the library. Your municipal court records we have here, it says, are included in your city retention schedule. I'm going to say should be included in your city retention schedule. City's Records Management Officer, RMO. How many of you have heard of that term? Maybe a couple of you, okay. That person is the person that's responsible for your records management program, and they're responsible for maintaining that schedule. Now, maybe or maybe not, you might want to write down a list of things to do. Just find out who that person is. I'll probably bring that up later on. Just find out who your RMO, your records management officer, is for your city. Because he or she ought to be one of your buds. Your court records, records pertaining to your court. Overall, you can find them in Local Government Schedule LC, which is available on our website. And LC is the Records of Justice and Municipal Court. And don't worry, later I'll show you a link to our webpage. Records that pertain to financial, administrative, personnel records of a justice or municipal court can be found in Local Government Schedule GR, records common to all local governments, also available on our website. And emergency preparedness is part of your city's overall records management program. It should be. Sure hope it is. Since we are talking about records, I think we should, this is a bonus that's probably not in your, I don't think it's in your book. Understands what a record is. This is the definition of a local record. It's anything created or received by a local government or employee during the transaction of business on government time and or resources. And I'm going to throw out there, might also be on personal device. And it's regardless of the medium. So I know we're also used to this, and we know a lot of you judges, a lot of attorneys like this, want to keep this, but look at all those different ways that a record can be, the different types of media. It could be an audio recording, a video recording. It could be on microfilm. Yes, books and maps. Anyone been to Austin? Seen the Colonel Travis letter? That's a record. We also have maps, old maps down there. Those are considered to be records. And electronics. So what does that mean? It means TIFF and PDF images, Access databases, Word documents, Excel spreadsheets. Are you catching my hint there a little bit? It includes emails and their attachments. Whole other big world. Time to talk about that. So, and it's regardless of whether or not the information is confidential. So, any of you thinking now pretty much everything you deal with is a record? Yeah? Would you like some good news? Yes, she does. Yeah. I didn't know those were records. There are some exceptions. If the person or office responsible for that record. You may have what's called a convenience copy. I'll give you an example. The Human Resources Department is the custodian of Human Resources program records. So any other departments or division copies are considered convenience copies. They're not records. Anyone ever partake, be involved in a Public Information Act request, formerly open records? The copies that are furnished to that requester are not defined as a record. Blank form stock publications also. Reference materials. And the working files of an ADR, not considered a record. The final decision of an alternative dispute resolution is considered a record. It has a corresponding retention period for it. But the working files are not considered to be records. Okay. And if at any time you have questions, please raise your hand, jump up and down. Gentleman, so I had a gentleman that was asking for information, a government agent was asking, a military person was asking for information from a young man that was getting ready to enter the military.
He had his politics.
Okay.
And he said, I need to see what you have on him.
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to claim to be the expert on records, but which the AG office is. That's what it sounds like to me, is an open records information. So when in doubt on those type of things or whether or not a record should be considered confidential, contact the Attorney General's office, and they can give you the ruling on that. So that sounds like it might fall into that, but I'd have to talk to our representative and our agency to see if that would fall under. It does, so. Everybody get that? Okay. Promise you we're talking about emergencies, incidents that have occurred across Texas that in one way or another have affected records. Anybody remember this one? I was living in Austin at the time. That was a rough storm. That used to be the Bank One Tower there on the right. And there used to be an FBI downtown Fort Worth. And in the weeks that followed this tornado, there were images of the field agents walking around, sifting through the rubble looking for confidential documents that had been blown out of their heavily damaged office. Yike. Anyone remember that one? 5 tornado hit Jarrell, about 40 miles north of Austin. Obliterated an entire subdivision. Recently, we had a little deja vu up in the panhandle. Several months back in 2005, 2006, affected, Hutchinson, Gray, Childress, some 5 million acres were destroyed, about 2% of Texas's land. I'm not originally from Texas, so I don't see how you get the pronunciation of that county unless you remove the... Regardless, in 1998 and again in 2002, storms caused flooding in nearly 30 counties, including Bexar County. Anybody from Bexar County here? That just gets me. This is pretty funny. How about Allison? Anybody involved in that by chance? Lose any records in that? Not a good day to do some shopping. And yeah, everybody probably remembers Ike. Left 6 feet of water in the Galveston County Courthouse and flooded the Utah branch down there at Galveston. Now, if you look closely at these, you'll notice only one picture is Texas. But it's to illustrate an important point. Think of the number of counties that store records in their courthouses and venture a guess where they store them. Basement, the attic. I can explain later why that's not a good idea on your own. And some down power lines, thanks to Doug. And in this day and age, with technology, we have these issues coming up. Last year, they found out at UTA that their computer server had been compromised four times between February 2009 and February of 2010, potentially leaving some pretty important information there. Remember back in 2000, that teenager out of Houston somehow managed to hack into some pretty important computer systems? White House, the Army, caused considerable damage. And then last summer, the website for Texas Tech Health Sciences Center was down for an entire day, courtesy of a virus, a computer virus. So what are records? In one word, right? Information. Information is an asset, and it needs to be managed and treated. Your organization and your office. Now, emergencies, or I'm going to say incidents, depend a lot on the hazards and threats out to your records. Think of where your office, where your courthouse is. Anybody situated near a major highway? Plant, like a factory? How about a railway? How about a body of water? Good, good. Okay. In a valley? On a hillside? Stores. Okay, good. Extremely important that you have active records management. What do you think I mean by active records management? Should be routine. Should be part of your normal course of business. Should be a higher priority than what it usually is. Yeah. You should have a schedule. Your city should have a schedule, which should be current. You should have a list of your essential records. You should know where all of your records are. And routine disposition, whether that every calendar year in, every fiscal year in, is extremely important. I mentioned just a bit ago that the UT Medical Branch at Galveston got flooded. They had all their documents sent off to be salvaged. Spent lots of money. We're talking a lot. And guess what they found out? Only about 5% of those documents actually needed to be kept. Because pretty much all of it was junk. Retention periods had already expired. Or they were convenience copies. And remember we said earlier, by definition, are not records. So how do you think they could have avoided spending that millions of dollars they spent? Records management, right. Had they known what their records were, had they done maybe what's called a records inventory and known specifically what they had on hand, they would have seen, oh, this is junk, it's not a record. Oh, convenience copy, not a record. And had they done routine disposition, when they came across those records that whose retention periods had expired, they could have gotten rid of them. Once the retention period is up, you do not have to keep it. By law, you're not required to keep it. So we at the State Library recommend you get rid of it. If you feel the need to hang on to it for some reason, then back it up, maybe on a disk and put it somewhere else. But try to get rid of those records as soon as you can, as soon as you legally can. Emergencies aren't there for everybody. What am I talking about? We're all too familiar with these, all right, in this part of the country, unfortunately. There's also things like tornadoes, which are creeping their way down this part of the country, unfortunately. Earthquakes, lightning strikes, disease falls in this category. How about these? Also include things like computer crashes. Ever have a hazmat spill in your materials? That can be some trouble. Communication failures. And you also have these. Also include things like disgruntled employees getting out of hand. Bomb threats. And as we found out in Austin last spring, plane crashes. All this in mind, we said, wow, you're thinking, well, there's a lot of things threatening your records. Yeah, there are. So kind of good to know a couple important legal obligations pertaining to your records and being prepared for any incidents. One is, as local governments, you must have an assessment records program. In that program, you need to identify and protect essential records. What do you think I mean when I say protect? Protect them from what? D, all the above. That's my phrase. I use that a lot, D, all the above. Accidental destruction. And one of the earlier slides with the hackers. Unauthorized access. And you also need to have an emergency management program or plan. It's recommended out of the governor's office that you have a COOP. Anybody heard that term, COOP? Not co-op, but stands for continuity of operations. It deals with you ensuring that you can continue your operations, your business functions, during and after an incident. Now, this is geared toward federal agencies. But FEMA was tasked with extending training and planning to state, local, territorial, and tribal governments, to everybody. So if you haven't heard of this, and your records management officer should be included in the planning for this, so hopefully he or she is already. And you're going to see this list here. These are all different important areas to ensure that you have viable continuity. And we're going to spend some time talking about those top two, essential functions and essential records. Now, hands. You know if you have an emergency management program or plan in your county, in your city? You have one? You have one? Okay, good. If you don't know if you have one, if you're not sure if you have is sufficient, this is a good resource for you. Chapter 418 of the Texas Government Code gives responsibility to TDEM, Texas Division of Emergency Management. They fall under the Department of Public Safety. That assigns them responsibility an all-hazard emergency management plan for the state of Texas, and they're also held responsible for helping cities, counties, and state agencies with implementing their own plans. So, if you have questions about your plan, your folks should be contacting these folks here. You can go to Austin for training. They can bring the training to you. That's the link to their webpage. Lots of good information out there. If you have questions and you prefer to talk to someone that you've actually seen or talked to before, I'm certified through FEMA as a practitioner. I help write our plan for our agency. You're more than welcome to contact me if you have questions about your plan or how to set one up. Take me up on it. I've had a couple people. So, let's talk about essential records. What are they? I first want to point out a web page to you. I don't know, has anybody seen this by chance? I think last time we had maybe one person. This is off the Department of the State Health Services. And the website is www.texasprepares.org. He's going to link it there. wcubed.texasprepares.org. And again, this is from the Department of State Health. And this has a whole bunch of good information for families. It's to help them prepare for a disaster or an emergency. Has all sorts of good information out there about how to put together a supply kit, evacuation plan or route, communication plans. And one important part on that website is what's called grab-and-go documents. Anybody heard that term? No one has? This is if a family has just a few minutes to evacuate. It's their important, irreplaceable files and documents located in one place. That's their essential records. So think of those documents that enable a family to respond to an incident, contact information, phone numbers, documents that help them to prove their identity, passports, birth certificates, and documents and files that would help them to recover from an incident, wills, insurance policies, medical files. So hopefully I think we're all familiar with documents and files and would agree that they're essential, right? So let's take a look at the equivalent in government organizations. We're going to talk about what they are. We're going to define them. Talk about how you differentiate them from among all those records that you have in your office. How do you protect them from, what did we say earlier? Protect them from what? Right. And then how do you make sure you can access those should an incident occur? There's the definition of a central record. It's your record you need to resume your operations, recreate your legal or financial status, and protect and fulfill the obligations to your customer, to the public, to the people of the state. These records, remember we said you're required to identify and protect them. These type of records must be backed up and stored off-site. And FEMA recommends storing the backups at least 3 miles from the originals. I'll say again, recommends. It's not a requirement. And if you have essential e-records, electronic records, those have to be backed up along with the documentation and software that you need to retrieve and read those records. So now you're thinking, oh, I need to get buddy-buddy with our IT person, huh? Making sure those documents that you have that are considered to be essential are backed up and stored off-site. You know where they're at, how to get to them in times of an incident. And they also want to keep in mind that some records are only essential for a specific time period, like maybe during an audit or a court case. How about some examples of those three different categories? I also want to throw, there's a fourth one that's not up there. Think of records that would require massive resources to reconstruct, like maybe. So here's some examples of records needed to resume or continue your operations. See any there that sound familiar that you maybe deal with? Can you think of any, maybe others that might go up there, fall in that category? Records that you deal with, you need to continue or resume your operations. Maybe information might be up there. How about some examples of records that you need to recreate on financial status? One at a time, please. Yeah, Social Security, right? I was waiting for somebody to go payroll. Normally somebody shouts out payroll. I want to get paid, yeah? Or maybe fees, something dealing with fees. Fees collected, fees due. And how about this category? Records that are needed to fulfill your obligations to the people. Just a few examples. Whenever we talk to school districts, when we come across this category, we tell them student transcripts. Would be an example, falls in that category. But probably voting records, I don't know if you do those, probably. I'm sure the active court proceedings, that's a big one. So you have a better idea of what an essential record is, I hope, now. So you have to determine which of your records are essential. So I'm going to give you some more good news. Typically, less than 5% of government records are essential. Okay, that's good news, right? But I got to give you the bad news, too. There's no one master list of all records that any government organization considers essential. And no one can define for you which of your records are essential. You're going to have to do that yourself. I can't come in, one of my colleagues cannot come in and tell you, yes, sir, yes, ma'am, these are essential. You're going to have to look at it and determine if that particular record is essential to your functions, to your operations. It's not what you wanted to hear, probably, but wouldn't you like to know how to go about identifying which of your records are essential? That's what we're going to look at next. Take a look at different factors to consider as you go through all your records. I'm going to first take a look at your essential functions. This is actually pulled out of Federal Continuity Directive 1. So at the federal level, this is a definition of what an essential function is. How about if we put it this way? Think of your function continue with little or no disruption. that can't be interrupted for more than 12 hours. Does that help? Your functions that can't be interrupted for longer than 12 hours. Now, you get to be kind of like prospectors. Prospectors sift for gold. Only you're not looking for gold. You're looking for your essential records. So think of all of your court's business functions. Okay? You're going to start sifting through those. And as you're sifting through them, you're going to ask yourself a question. Which of those functions do you need to continue to perform, regardless of the circumstances? All right? You're sifting through those, sifting away. And then you're going to ask yourself another question. Which of those functions are performed only by your court? Only by you. Keep sifting. I know your arm's getting tired. And then you're going to ask yourself if there's an alternative method to perform those functions. Is there another court, another organization, another person that can perform that function or functions? What remains will be your essential function. And guess what? Your essential functions are supported by, that's right, your essential records. Questions? This will get you all thinking a little bit here. Here's a list of some duties that are common to municipal judges in this state. I can't vouch for that. It's all, that hits the ones you consider to be most important. But we took that out of that great municipal judges book we got from Mark and his folks last year. So we definitely know it's accurate. So with that in mind, what are essential functions of a municipal court? Just give me an example. You work there. I don't. So I... For what? What sort of... That's a general one. That's a cop-out. Citations? So keeping track of so requests for trial, but keeping track of it, and okay. What would be another essential function of a municipal court? Court, okay. Okay. So you couldn't operate functions within the court if you didn't have certain documents, or if the information was incorrect, or okay, good. Okay. Which of those functions? Not all inclusive. What you were just all saying, but which of those functions do you have to continue to perform? Start paring down that list. You think about all the things you do on a daily basis. Then start thinking about those things that you have to continue to do regardless. Say that again. Reports to the state. I'm the state representative to this afternoon, I guess. Yeah, but I'm not out of the, let's see, the comptroller, DPS, any of those. Yeah, thank goodness. Right. So what if there's an incident? I'm going to use that term again. If there's an incident, you couldn't delay something like that? Couldn't you delay court proceedings or going out to arraign somebody? Is that something that's pretty much set in stone? And that's open to interpretation, what short is? Okay. Depending on who I talk to, I get 12 different opinions here, probably. And we all know that's not going to happen anytime soon, unfortunately. Okay, so, okay, interesting. I didn't know. I didn't know if, you know, if we have another hurricane, we go, all right, everything's put on hold until further notice. It's just going to depend.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. The thoughts? I know you are thinking about meal in the pool outside. And the bar doesn't open until 4, so I gotta at least hold your attention. So then remember, that's the question you got to ask. Sifting those functions, then which of those functions are only performed by you? Pare it down. Magistrates. Issues of warrants, okay. What was that last one?
Capius
pro, okay. Everybody knows what that means. I don't, but it sounds official. So. My Latin is limited. And then, okay, then ask yourself, do you have an alternative method to perform those functions as you're paring them down? Can another court do something? If something happens, maybe you have a fire court, can you hand off a court case to some other court to do it or not? You have to do it regardless. It might be delayed, maybe, but you have to do it. I don't know.
I think the biggest problem is it wouldn't be no problem to have to do it in another court. The biggest problem would be if you lost the names. If you lost the names of courts, cases that would have been funded, if all that was lost, really have been to pass on unless you find that record.
So with that assumption of if you lose the names, then those are probably considered essential records, so then you haven't your duty of protecting those. So, okay, we'll just assume that you haven't. So the function is what we're looking at. So remember, as you sift through these, then what remains are your essential functions, and they are supported by your essential records. Okay, and I also want to say your essential records also go under the name of vital records or business critical records. So that's one factor you look at, functions. Then how about records in general? Now, remember a little bit earlier I said it's good to have active records management? Words to that effect, right? It's important you have records management. Boy, did that just make that more general, right? So we said it needs to be routine, part of your normal course of business. That schedule, talked about a little bit. Records inventory. Has anybody done a records inventory, part of one? No? Are you? Bless you. Good luck. It's one of those thankless tasks, but I'll talk about it a little bit later. But when you're doing a records inventory, when do you think would be a good time? That's what I want to ask you is, when would be a good time to do a records inventory? If we've got the time, because none of us have the time, but when's a good time, when's a logical time to do it? How many of you? Way I like to be organized. You all have very important positions and duties that require you to be extremely organized, right? I hope. And I don't know about you, but I need to know everything I have on hand before I can get organized. So a records inventory is a good way to do that. So maybe you're new, might be a good time to do it. You throw out there, you can maybe do it once a year. Depends on your schedule, the size of the volume of your records. When you do a records inventory, it needs to be complete. Just don't do one of these, we got some over here. It needs to be complete. It needs to be detailed and specific. Not like, we've got court records here and they're, we've got 8 boxes of them. You want specific information. You want the media that the record's in, film, fiche, paper, electronic, apps, whatever it might be, volume, quantity, dates. Bless you. Location, do you have a more than one story in your building? And what office, what room, filing cabinet, what drive, what folder on your computer? Detailed. records retention schedules explain the details of your records. It identifies and describes all the records that your court has, that your office has, and tells you how long you have to keep them legally. Information often comes from the information you've gathered in that records inventory. See, the two go together. You can't do one before the other. And I've personally spoken to a couple people that just put together a schedule without doing a records inventory. You can't. Hopefully you all know what records you have and where they're located. Do you know where your retention schedule is? Have you ever seen it? Really? One head nod, two? Well done. Okay. That's okay. You may not understand it, but at least you know who has it. You know where to go if you need to see it. Wait, can I get rid of this? It's important to know. Yeah, it's easy. We'll just go, I'm going to keep it forever. No, you don't necessarily need to keep it forever. Some records by law require to be kept permanently, forever. Others, a lot of others, aren't. So it's good that you know where to go to check and see when you can get rid of that record. No. Only those two? Anybody over here? Still waking up? Still thinking about pool time? Stop it. And now I'm making it worse. I'm going to start talking about more food with that title there. So these are people within and outside of your court that depend on your functions, depend on your services. So this could be more than just public. It could be people in IT, people in emergency management, people in HR. And who do you rely on to keep your operations going? Another court? About vendors, contractors, and our folks at the utility companies, maybe? Power's a good thing to have, right? You want to talk to these folks and ask them kind of a hypothetical question. What if you didn't have access to specific information for a day, or a week, or longer? People don't like hearing that. Our directors didn't like hearing that when we talked about that last year in a tabletop exercise we did, our continuity, to test our continuity plan. We said, hey, what if our computer system was down for a week? Oh, yeah, that's no problem. Really? Okay. A little bit later, we said, it's down now for 4 weeks. Now what? And finally, guess what? System would be up for at least three more months. Then people started thinking, wow. Look outside that box. Ask these folks, your stakeholders, how long could they operate without those records that you have, that you provide? And lastly, those statutes, those red that apply to your municipality. This is the one when you mentioned earlier about the state agency, I think, ma'am, in the back. Sorry, I don't know her name. But you say earlier about something about reporting. Yeah, ask, are there any functions, are there any things that can be delayed? If you submit a report to the state agency, contact whoever that person is there that you submit that record to or records and ask, can it be delayed any? Or does it have to be submitted regardless? Is there something set in stone somewhere in some state regulation that says, no, you have to do that regardless? That was the one I couldn't think of. Office of Court Administration. GPS, comptroller, there might be others that you interact with. National organizations, so there's ANSI, American National Insurance Institute, that deals a lot with things pertaining to essential, or I believe on their website they're referred to as vital records. And then also ARMA International, which is a professional organization that deals with records information management training. So, and there's our blog. I don't know how many familiar with our blog. You know, our blog replaced our biannual newsletter. So I will mention that later on. And we try to put information out there. As we learn it, if there's something new, we put it out there as soon as we can. Let you all know about it as it pertains to your records. I know there's no way you're going to see that thing like that, but that's a docket. Think about the records that you have in your court and which ones support your essential functions. And there's just a list of some records that are created by municipal courts. There's various case papers and dockets, juror information, fees due and collected. You all create quite a few records, important ones. And there's reports that submitted to state agencies, DPS, comptroller, etc. Okay? Still with me? Okay, so you know what an essential record is. You have at least have an idea of what an essential record is and how to go about differentiating your essential records from all the records that you generate. Okay? Now, remember we said that you're obligated as local governments to identify and protect your essential records. So what I'm going to take a look at next is how do you go about protecting essential records? Well, you first need to identify and evaluate hazards and risks to your records. And then you're going to look at your options after that. So a few little terms here. Hazard, anything that's potentially harmful or dangerous. It could be a process or a condition. On the left is a picture of water pipes. And we're just going to assume, I don't like to use that word normally, but we'll assume, what if those are over or near your records? Bad, bad idea. That's a hazard. That's a hazard. A risk, that's the potential harm that might arise or result from that hazard. Now, the question was asked before, that picture on the right, is that a box of wet records or is that a wet box of records? I don't think it matters, does it? That would be a risk. Risk management, that's where you evaluate and assess your risks and you prioritize actions that you're going to implement because of what you've discovered. And risk assessment is where you take a look at the potential harm that might result from exposure to those risks and hazards. And we're going to spend a little time talking about risk assessment. Techniques to risk assessment. And risk assessment ideally should be done with more than one person. Now, how many of you are just like a one-person shop? Yeah, two, three, okay. Okay. You have a bit of a challenge, but then you reach out. And there's got to be other folks nearby in your line of work and get their assistance. One is expert interviews. One technique of risk assessment is expert interviews. How many of you ever had somebody from the police department come around and check your doors and windows to make sure they're secure, your facility? Okay, hopefully you have at one time or another. How about police department? I'm sorry, fire department, coming through to test your alarms, your sprinkler systems. What are those red things that sit around collecting dust, those fire extinguishers? Silver. We have a couple silver ones in our storage center. Yeah. Anybody talk to your IT or your IRT, information resources technology person or persons, about changing passwords on your computer, about stuff dealing with the firewall? That make use of those experts. Talk to them. Get their input on what those potential risks might be out there to your record. Brainstorming, we all know about that, right? A group of folks looking outside that box. And then site survey. Site survey you definitely should do with more than one person. You need that extra set of eyes. You need that second opinion when you're looking at that. Do a little time hack here. Is everybody about ready for a break? Stretch your legs a little bit. Bathroom break. Why don't we take 10 minutes? If you can be back in time, 10 minutes. If you can't, break. Okay, not here. Raise your hand. Feet hand straight. Kind of like some pictures dwell on incidents. Emergencies, disasters, but I got these from our regional FEMA guy, Brad McDaniel. Just think if you had records in these offices where they might be. So, a little recap so we know what essential records are. How do you identify them in your court? And then you need to protect them, so you need to look at those hazards and risks to your records. And we're going to spend some time talking about assessment. Three techniques, and the one we're going to spend a little time on is a site survey. What did I recommend? Site survey. Can you do yourself? No. You need an extra set of eyes. You need a second opinion. I did that 3 weeks ago. Walked around our facility in Austin with the building manager and conducted a site survey. Had his input on it and found some things. So, but with a site survey, there's several things you need to consider for areas. And we'll go through this list here. How many of you ever bought gas in the summer? Left the receipt for an hour or two, only to come out and start questioning your eyesight because you have trouble reading it because that ink started to fade. Sure, humidity very easily can damage your records regardless of the medium that they're in. So can mold, mildew, rodents, pests. Years ago, who had just taken office, he had his folks conduct a records inventory, and they came across a few boxes of records in a room that were falling apart, is what he told me, because of termites. He didn't tell me what records they are, or but he said they were literally falling apart, so not a good thing. Physical factors. Things like access controls. How many of you have one of these to get into your building where you swipe it, show it to somebody that's sitting at a desk, or you have a code to type in, or maybe an armed guard, I don't know. Your computer server happens to it, all the computers hooked up to it, so hopefully you have access controls to that, or the server room, the room where it's located. Hopefully you do. I know a business in the Dallas area that doesn't, that much anybody could come and go to their server room. Not a good thing. Think of, are your records located in the best location? Share some stories with you on that one, on that thought. We know of a local government that a while back worked a deal with a landowner nearby to store records on his had passed and they went out to retrieve some of their records only to find out that the landowner had decided during the interim had decided to raise goats on and somehow one or more of the goats managed to find its way into the shed and actually dine on some of the records. Fortunately it's not the same one. At you have to go through the ladies' room to get to their record storage. Maybe it's their form of access control. We're not sure, but not a good idea. When I was on duty in the military, I was part of a team that would go around base and conduct scenarios to test procedures in place. One time we gained access to a locked office rather easily by going to the office next door that was unlocked, went in, boosted one of the guys up, and he went over the lowered ceiling, and no, there wasn't that concrete firewall up there, and he got in and let us come in. Documents on the desk and filing cabinets were unlocked. Fortunately, no classified information was out. Very easy. So think of the location where your records are and if it's the best place. Probably not, maybe not. Personnel factors you want to consider. How many of you handle sensitive or confidential documents in your sensitive or confidential information? Addresses, phone numbers, social security numbers, things like that. I would think that would be somewhere in a court case document, something like that. I'm just a hunch, I'm just guessing. Is that why you gave me that look like, come on, Brett? No, I haven't seen any documents that you deal with, so okay. Is it a condition of employment, a background check in your office, in your court? Okay. I didn't want to make an assumption, so. And do you have security awareness training for new hires? Or routinely, every 6 months maybe, you know, with a staff meeting or something, say, all right, here's a refresher on how to handle these documents. Something to think about, that's all. Just something to think about. Something like that might have happened or helped a few years ago, that security training. That might have helped a few years ago. There are a couple major incidents in the anything with lost or stolen, you decide. Laptop computers. You may remember in 2005, Ameriprise Financial had an incident that affected some 158,000 clients. And that same year, the VA, the Veterans Administration, had a similar incident that affected over 26.5 million vets. I was, still am a member of those categories. I got letters apologizing for all. Yeah. Just like the comptroller's one, I've heard about that incident too. So it happened. Information security. Would you that deal with documents? Are they clearly marked and labeled? I hope the answer to that question is yes. How many of you feel you have strong passwords? One hand. That went up pretty fast. So she's the only one that feels she has a strong password to her computer? No. No, yours, no one else, I know, I saw no other hands. She was on password. I've come across some bad examples and some good examples over the years. Most recently, an individual's password was their son's name. Not a good example. Another individual's password was password. Don't use names, simple things like that. Anybody know what the recommendation is? Of at least 8 upper and lowercase letters, numbers. I have a handout here on this table. You're welcome to take one. And it has a new way to look at passwords together. I actually, when I came across a couple months ago, I implemented it on my passwords home as well. It takes a little while to remember them, but it increases your protection factor. And of course, you have a lot of passwords. So how many have your passwords written on a little sticky note that's in your wallet, your billfold, stuck on your phone, edge of your computer screen? Go ahead, you can admit it. This is Vegas. What happens here stays here, okay? The security camera shut off a while ago. Yeah. Well, a few years ago, I went to do some work on a computer in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and the employee was not available. So I went to the office manager and asked their password, and she told me to under their keyboard. I think I found under the keyboard. I found nicely typed on a 3x5 card that employee's name and password, along with the other names and passwords of every employee in that office, about 10 to 12 people. Just imagine if I broke into that place. Anyway, the funny part? I think it's funny. The law firm. I think it's pretty funny. I'm assuming it's still a law firm, still there. So. And then you don't have to be in the military scenarios, the preparedness factors you want to consider. How many of you know when that fire drill is going to happen? Wait, let me back up. How many of you have fire drills? Uh-oh. Okay. Well, have planned and unplanned ones. At our building, we see everybody seems to know. The only people we're supposed to know is the director and the building manager and me. I'm a coop person. Everybody seems to know. So have them at a different time of day, different time of year, and make them as real as possible. Because when an incident occurs, right, everything's going to go wrong. That exit is going to be blocked, or you thought you could grab those files and you can't for whatever reason. So how many of you have an end-of-day checklist where the last person out has to go around and make sure the documents are desk, put in the filing cabinets, cabinet locked as applicable. Machines are turned off. Maybe you have a security alarm and that has to be turned on. None of you have an end-of-day checklist? Okay. Something like that might have helped years ago when I was active duty. I went out one morning to one of the aircraft hangars and the guys literally were laughing because they had left on a coffee machine overnight. Left that dark residue. I don't drink coffee, so couldn't appreciate the humor maybe, but left that. You want to guess where the coffee machine was located? What? By the records, on top of a filing cabinet that contained thousands of aircraft maintenance records, paper records, and it, no, not a fireproof cabinet. They lucked out. They lucked out. So, end of day checks, might want to consider it. Questions? So, What are the three to risk assessment? Up on a screen for you, that's easy. Site survey, which we do alone? No, we try to do it with somebody else, ideally. It'll be very beneficial to you if you can. Risk assessment, another technique.
Brainstorming.
Involved, look outside that box, talk about it. And police, IT people, fire, experts, talk to the experts. After you do that risk assessment to your residents, then you can analyze those risks. With a rating system, keep it simple. You can do a 10 scale or a low to high. Here we have an example of a low to high scale. And you're going to rate two areas for each of the risks identified in your risk assessment. You're going to rate that probability, you can do the probability rating and the impact rating. The probability rating is that risk or impact your records. And the impact rating is the severity of risk occur, whatever that risk might be, fire, water, theft, pests, rodents. So like here, if you have low impact and low probability, that's a minor marginal impact with some loss to your records, and the event has little chance of occurring. All the way up to high impact and high probability, it's a catastrophic impact. Devastating loss to your records, and you're sure that event is going to occur. So you're going to rate each of the risks that you identify in your risk assessment. So there's some examples there. Water damage, fire damage, theft, mold and mildew. Now, we have limited resources. Can we all agree on that? Or do you have unlimited resources? Time, money, people? If you have unlimited, let me know. I want to learn your secret. So in these times of limited resources, if you're using a low to high scale and you've rated your risk, where on here, let's say you have a bunch of your, they're rated all throughout these boxes, where should you focus your efforts, your actions? What should be your priorities? Just any of them, or which ones, you think? Those up in that corner there. If you're using a 1 to 10 scale, certainly anything that's rated 6 and 6 on up, you should focus your efforts on. I know I'll say. Page 25 in your book, you find about the Danville. Why did I say Danbury? I had that on my mind. Danville. Now, what did I say about site survey and assessment? Ideal to do it, but with somebody else. So, I don't care how you do it. Take a few minutes and get together in groups or pairs. Read through that. And there's a page, if you'll turn, there's a page there where you have, take a look at those risks. Danville's not too smart, as you'll see. And I'm sure you're going to identify more than three risks. But on that page, it's limited to three risks. Identify the potential risk. Everybody find it? If you'll turn the page, turn that next page is what you're going to do. You're going to read about their what they have. And it's on page 27. You refer to page 27, and you're going to note down three risks. Source of the risk, potential effects on any essential records there at the court. And then you're going to rate the probability and the likelihood. Probability or likelihood of the risk occurring, and then the severity, the impact of that risk. Okay? And then we'll go over and I'll ask you, see what you've identified, and jet fuel, plane crash, all this. They picked the prime spot, didn't they? So you got mice. Did anybody write down alligators? Is that under varmints? Somebody once said that wouldn't be a problem because they would not be attracted to the mice. That alligators, what did they say? They sound like they're some zoology specialist or whatever. Like, you tell me, is there a risk, in a risk with alligators in the area where you're storing your records? I don't know. It could be a good thing. It depends on perspective, right?
But it's a swamp, so that means flooding.
So there's what the specific risks to the records are. I hear humidity, water, rodents, and rodents can do. There's different things, right? Rodents. We've heard a story of a local government. All these local governments. State agencies are just better at keeping it secret, that's all. Raccoons got into the record storage area and just chewed it up, and then, you know, what do animals do when they eat and drink? So it was a mess, and I saw some pictures of it. I was like, oh. And they wanted to know if they should try to salvage them. I went, well, I'm not the salvage expert. You need to contact a salvage expert and see if your record's going to be salvaged. So heat, humidity, water damage, the risk of water damage. And then risk of theft or maybe vandalism. How did you rate those? Probability of them occurring high on probably a lot of them at least. Yeah. When I was doing computer tech support work a few years ago, I went to a place and the guy was backing up his folders, his files on his hard drive, backing them up on his hard drive. He was basically copying them, but he didn't get it. So I let his wife, she assured me that she would talk to him later, but yeah. Yeah, yeah. We're going to get into that a little bit, but having them in the same computer and the same machine is not backing them up. Did you rate the severity also high, or were you not sure about the severity of the effects of those risks to the records? So you mean for maybe theft of records or vandalism? So you think that would be, the severity would be low, or the risk of it, the impact? Right, okay, if it happened. But probability would be low. Okay, that's a good point. They may not know they're there. Our facility, where I currently work, behind us is the State Record Center. It's where state agencies are allowed to store inactive records. It's in a neighborhood for a reason. And if you drive... People all the time that come to classes, they say, oh, they went down twice before they realize, oh, that's the place where to go. There's a reason for that. So people don't go, we don't have a big sign out front going, this is where we store records. We have a low risk, low threat level as far as theft and vandalism. But yeah, if it happened, severity would be quite high. So good point. Anything else? Other than glad you don't work there. They picked the great spot, didn't they? Thoughts, comments, anything? You think? Yeah, it'd be a good idea to do an inventory to know, you know, maybe they, like the UT medical branch at Galveston, maybe they've got some convenience copies there. Maybe they've got a bunch of junk, maybe expired retention periods. Get rid of a whole bunch of that stuff. It would be a good idea, so. Maybe they ought to hire you, have you come on in and help them out. Like, thanks, but no thanks. Okay, so You do your site survey, or your brainstorming, or your expert interviews. And you can do one or a combination of any of those three techniques of risk assessment. So you do that, and then you want to look at your options. Remember we said, where do you focus your efforts? What's your threshold of action? Because you don't have the resources, I don't think any of us does, to spend your time on all the different risks that you've identified and rated. So you're going to focus on those that are high, particularly high. And here's some options that you have. On-site protection. And with all these options, two things you want to consider. Costs and the records medium. Think. Paper records are going to have different costs and issues than film, than electronic records. So consider the potential costs in the records media. So with on-site protection, that's using things like fire-resistant vaults, cabinets, metal shelves instead of wooden shelves. Might be surprised, the number of people we hear that use wooden shelves. Why do you think that's a bad idea? And how about water? Wooden shelves would absorb water. Soak it up. Evacuation, another option you have, where you transfer to another site when the incident occurs. Now, with that option, there are several things you need to decide well in advance of the incident, not when it's happening. What records are you going to evacuate? You're going to transfer them all or just certain ones? Where are you going to take them to? His garage? Or vendor.